Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to Flow Guitar Enthusiasts with Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players, as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, we welcome Jim Kimo West, a Hawaii slack key guitarist and composer. Jim is best known for being the guitarist for Weird Al Yankovic. We will speak with him about his efforts in keeping the acoustic guitar alive and slack key guitar itself. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio at www.sweetwater.com. Go and order something and tell them Flow Guitar sent you. And now here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. We have a very interesting show tonight for you. Talking about tone, this is probably going to be all about tone. There's a lot of interesting tunings and guitars that we're talking about tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun. Scott, what have you been up to?
I've been very busy, actually. I just finished the Bruce Kulick video.
Okay.
That goes over his Les Paul Jr.
Mm-hmm.
So check that out on my YouTube channel, Selenium, at Selenium.
Mm-hmm.
Along with that, I also shot and finished the Orange VT-1000 valve tester. Or tube tester. So that's done.
Oh, okay. I saw something about that
this
afternoon, but I didn't get a chance to look at it.
Yeah, that is a very cool thing, man. I don't know what, you know, I don't know what else to tell anybody. If you have tube amps, you should own one of those because they're amazing. They're so easy to use. And, I found out that one of my amps has two bad tubes in it. But,
yeah.
Well, they're worn, as they say, but they should be replaced. And then yesterday, I just shot, edited, and then uploaded about 2 hours ago a Celestion speaker shootout between three different speakers.
Oh, that'll be
so. That's the A type, the V type, and their limited edition 90th anniversary. So that's
which one did you like best?
You know, I actually kind of like the A type, but I really like the V type too. But the A type sounds pretty good in this, at least in this shootout. I really like
mm-hmm.
it, but. But as I say, you're not trying to pick a winner. You're picking one that likes, you know, that fits your tone and your sound, your needs. So
you think the A was pretty versatile as an all-around speaker?
I thought it
clean
did pretty good.
Clean and dirty,
you know,
going both ways.
I mean, it's a different sound because, like, the V-Type and the other one, they definitely have that kind of British speaker sound where it's kind of more of a, I don't know what I want to say, but it's just, it's different.
So the A is supposed to be more like the American?
That's correct.
Yeah.
So it's really cool. But, I was really shocked and... It was a lot of work, but I got them done, so I was pretty excited. So
I
got to do this week is I got to do the Yamaha guitar, the L series, before Yamaha next week.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that. So we'll have that guitar in studio, so
yes,
that should be fun.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, we saw them at the show, and they were interesting guitars, but I want to play this one. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, so if you want to see those videos, go to my YouTube channel at Selenium. What have you been up to, Jeff?
Just did a couple more tracks for those American girls. They just came out with like a double album of 80 minutes of music. So it's a lot of fun for me because I just get to play feedback and do, you know, screaming bizarre stuff. So it's kind of fun to get my Hendrix out, you know, so it's kind of fun. But anyway, check out thoseamericangirls.com and their new album. It's really an interesting album and it's kind of fun. They do kind of strange stuff. It's a lot of fun. But anyway, all right, well, listen, let's go ahead to commercial, and when we get back, let's get into Hawaiian slack key guitar. We're going to find out all about it, where it came from, what it is exactly, and you're going to be surprised what you hear here, because it's, some of the stuff that I've played that I've learned as a folk musician, I can see where it came from. So anyway, we'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, Kenny Burgle here, one of the many guitar freaks at Sweetwater. We're so proud to support the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Show. Check out our amazing collection of Taylor guitars at the Guitar Gallery on the web at sweetwater.com. Click on our Guitar Gallery link and you can see a bunch of the pictures of each of the thousands of actual guitars we have in stock. Or call us at 800-222-4700 and speak to a professional guitar enthusiast directly. This week, the Flow welcomes Jim Kimo West, renowned slack key guitarist. What people may not know is that he actually helped Bob Taylor develop the Taylor pickup system while working musically long time with another happy Sweetwater customer, Weird Al. So have fun this week with Scott and Jeff and Kimo, and be sure to check out our guitar gallery at sweetwater.com or call us at 800-222-4700. Thanks for listening, and this is Kenny Burgle with Sweetwater saying, rock on with the Flow.
Hi, this is Elliot Easton of the Empty Hearts, and you're listening to Scott and Jeff on the Flow Guitar Enthusiasts.
Welcome back, and I'm going to start the show. I just want to thank Jim for being on the show, but I'm going to play you a clip, an opening clip that kind of, I think, captures what it's all about. And you're going to, these guitars that Jim's using and his tone is just killer. So anyway, I'm going to play this opening clip, and then we're going to go right into it. This is Maui Skies, the title song from his one of his recent albums. And just listen to these guitars. They're just so beautiful. Welcome, Jim. Thanks for being on the show.
Aloha, you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Now, I want you to describe. When listening to all the different things that you've done, and I pulled clips from about three albums, just three of the ones you've done more than that. But it's hard. I'm hearing folk influences. I'm hearing some blues influences. I'm hearing some swing, some jazz influences. Can you give a definition of what slack key guitar, because it sounds like it's like a melding of all of this.
Well, you know, it certainly has become more of a melding of musics over the years. You know, I think most players, bring their own, you know, musical influences into slack key, and even in Hawaii with the musicians who started off playing traditional Hawaiian music, they're always exposed to different kinds of music over the radio and on TV. So, you know, people have brought in their different influences. But traditionally, Hawaiian slack key guitar came from a place of innocence, really, in a way, because guitars were, they were first brought to Hawaii by Spanish vaqueros. They were these vaqueros were the Spanish cowboys who were brought over by King Kamehameha II to help the Hawaiians manage cattle. There was this overpopulation of cattle on the Big Island of Hawaii because one of the early explorers had given King Kamehameha I like three head of cattle, and they didn't know what to do with them, and they just multiplied, and they were running all over the place, you know, going crazy and scaring everybody. So by this point, they decided, hey, we need to, you know, get somebody over to teach everybody how to manage cattle. So they brought the Spanish vaqueros over from Monterey area of California, which was Mexico at the time. Mm-hmm. And so the Hawaiians were, you know, learned to be incredible cowboys. And they were fascinated by the guitars, that the Spanish had brought guitars. And, you know, at the end of the day, they'd be playing these guitars around the campfire. And were just amazed by the sound. And one of the interesting things about the Spanish said when they play the guitars, well, you know, they like love to play just for enjoyment, but they also said one of the great benefits, too, is it would actually keep the cattle calm, you know, because mm-hmm. cattle, you know how they are. The one cow, you know, the lead cow starts getting excited, and they all go crazy and stampede. And so supposedly the Spanish would also play for that reason, too, so that the cattle would stay mellow. So anyway, the Hawaiians, you know, over this contract of about 2 or 3 years, the eventually the vaqueros left back for California, and they left some of the guitars behind. And the Hawaiians really didn't know anything about how to tune them, you know. So they just started tuning them in different kinds of open chords, whatever sounded good to their ears. Now, many different families would have different tunings, and they would compose their own songs based on these different tunings, you know. And the other, I should also mention, the other influence in Hawaiian music was the missionaries who came even a little bit earlier. They taught the Hawaiians how to sing because they taught them hymns. So the Hawaiians developed, you know, regular sort of Western music styles based on the singing, and then also from what they heard the Spanish play. So the earliest Hawaiian music really was the sound of slack key guitar and singing in Hawaiian language. And it goes back to about the 1840s, which is predates the blues, really. You know.
So you could define slack key as an open tuning.
Yes, slack key. You know, they called it slack key because, the Hawaiian term is ki hoalu, which means to loosen the key. They didn't have a word for key, but they just used the word key, which sounds appropriate in Hawaiian. But it basically just means that they would slack some of the strings down from standard tuning, and create a chord like. I've just got a very simple G tuning, which is a very, very, very common tuning in Hawaii. So besides being an open tuning, of course, there's lots of guitar music around the world done in different open tunings, so that's not the only thing a slack key is. It has an inherent sound. And they say that the sound of slack key is the sound of the aina, you know, the land. It comes from the land, you know, and they believe the sound, you know, has its basis in the environment, you know. And you know, one thing about Hawaiian music, I tell you, and even with, you know, the steel guitars, it's one of those musics that sounds more like the place than any music I know. I mean, when you hear Hawaiian music and you're there and you see the waves and the palm trees and the trade winds. I mean, it seems like the music really sounds like the place, you know? So that's one thing I noticed. When I first heard Hawaiian slack key guitar, I was like, gee, it really fits the place, you know? So anyway, besides the fact that it's an open tuning, you'll have a lot of sort of conventions in slack key and little, you know, I'm not really sure where some of these came from, but they're, you know, little... And generally, slack key isn't in major tuning. It's almost always a major sound. They don't really have a lot of minor slack key songs, you know.
They were not depressed.
No, it didn't fit the environment, you know. But you'll have very common little things like, you know, like... That's a very sort of a what they call a kalapana sound, you know, Big Island. All the different families, like I say, would have different tunings. And this is just a very standard open G tuning.
Now, since you do have open tunings, mm-hmm. do you actually have different gauges on your strings than what would normally be used?
You know, Not really. I mean, if some of the tunings are very extreme, where you have some one string that's really, really low, I generally use a light gauge set, but I put a 13 on the top, which is just a one gauge higher, because I find that it makes the melodies, you know, your melodies are often on the open string, open high string, not the open high string, but on the high string. So the having a little bit extra, you know, heavier gauge tends to, you know, make that melody sing a little better, I find. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it depends on the guitar. I've played guitars where a medium gauge, you know, set plays really well and is really easy to play. It just sort of depends on the gauge. But on these particular guitars, I've been using these Taylor 514 guitars, and they're mahogany body with a cedar top. Mm-hmm. They're just sort of a mid-range guitar. They're nothing real special, but the combination of the mahogany and the cedar, I think, is, you know, it really fits the slack key sound. Just very, as I say in Hawaii, nahe nahe, very gentle, you know, gentle sound.
Mm-hmm. Now, if someone plays ukulele with you, I mean, does that not make it slack key? Does it have to be just the guitar?
Oh, no. Slack key generally originally was played in a group, you know, with other musicians. They would play other instruments. Some of the early Hawaiian music featured some other instruments that were usually, there were things that were brought over by missionaries as well, like violin, mandolin. Those were very common in the early Hawaiian bands. And some of the early stories of Hawaiian musicians were sort of very similar to musicians around the world. They would ride around on horseback with their instruments, and they'd go play music at somebody's house, and of course they'd give them some food and stuff to drink, and then they'd say okay, and then they'd move on to another house and play music, you know, sort of traveling, you know, troubadours. But slack key wasn't always, you know, played solo, but of course, you know, you can hear it, you know, in the end of the day after the work was done on the ranch at the Parker Ranch or something, and they'd sit around and, you know, sometimes it might just be one guitar. They didn't have a lot of instruments in those days, so, you know, sometimes it was just one guitar. But yeah, it's not always, you know, the fact that you have an ukulele playing doesn't, you know, it's slack key can be accompanied by a lot of different things, and oftentimes, so one of my favorite sounds is two slack key guitars playing, where you have they're playing in the same key, for example, but they'll use different tunings. Mm. For example, a classic one is taking this tuning, which is open G, and I might put a capo and play it on the fifth fret, which would turn it into a C tuning. But then I would also play with somebody else who was playing a different kind of open C tuning, you know. Oh, and the combination of those two tunings together with two slack key guitars is really a cool sound. You know, it's, you get a lot of great color. And
I have a clip here. It's called, now my Hawaiian is terrible. I think it's Na Kua Kiwi o Kaoli.
Na Kua Hiwi means the hills of Kaoli. Kaoli is a place that I go in Hana, Maui.
But I mean, there's two guitars in there, but it's kind of a real rich. Is that those two different tunings?
Yeah, I believe so.
Let me play that clip for you, and then you can tell us what you're using.
But usually I would do that. If I was using, you know, two tracks of guitars, I would usually try and use two different tunings and, you know, maybe a different capo position or something.
Okay, let's take a listen, and you can tell us what you're doing. Thank you. What were you using there? Do you remember?
Well, I was definitely using one guitar in a standard G tuning. So I was doing something like that. Now, I may have been using another guitar in standard tuning, because that's another sound where you can just take a regular guitar. In a lot of Hawaiian groups, you'll have one guy who plays in standard tuning and one guy who plays in slack key tuning. So I believe it was essentially one guitar in slack key and one guitar in standard tuning. And by, you know, by having those differences, you get a lot of really nice complementary resonances, you know. But the fact that the guitar is tuned down, you always get a different kind of resonance on the guitars, you know. It's just it's just different than the way the strings ring together is just very, very different, and it changes from tuning to tuning. That's what I love about playing in different tunings, is you you experience a whole different kind of a ring and resonance to the tunings. And
well, the way you play the two guitars against each other, it has kind of like a 12-string feel, but it
isn't. Right, right,
right. It's a little more harmonically rich than a 12-string, but I felt like, for me, I'm like, is that a 12-string or
yeah,
what?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And one of the, you know, I use a baritone guitar a lot on songs, and a baritone in normally is tuned a fourth lower than a standard guitar. So if I'm playing in an open G tuning, which is D, G, D, G, B, D. If I lower that down a fourth, then your lowest, you're going to be in an open D tuning. So you're going to have A, D, A, D, and then you'll have F sharp and A again. And that is very, very rich. And one of the things I've found that's really kind of cool to do is take that baritone in that tuning and then take a regular guitar in the same tuning and capo onto the seventh fret, and then you're an octave above, and it sounds like the biggest 12 string you've ever heard.
Well, you brought a baritone. Can you show them?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
here, I'll hold this one for you.
Yeah, the baritone is baritone is quite a rich instrument. And I have one here. Now, this is tuned essentially to the same tuning that I was using on the standard guitar, but, like I say, it's a fourth lower. So we have...
That is so deep and rich.
It's fat.
Now that's a Tacoma, and is that a cedar top with a?
No, this is a mahogany body with a spruce top. That's how these came. It was called when they made these, it was called a Tacoma Thunderhawk, and I was, you know, I didn't know that anybody made a production model baritone. I thought you had to have them custom made, and I was in Gruen Guitars. That's a famous guitar shop in Nashville. I was on tour there. And just, you know, whenever I'm in Nashville, I got to go to Gruen Guitars. And, of course, they have all these amazing vintage instruments. And on the way out, I saw that they had two of these baritone Tacomas. One was solid Koa, and they had this one, which was more in my price range. You know, I started playing it, and it was like, I have to have this. And it was like, this is just the greatest thing. And it just really resonated with me, and you know, and I just put down my credit card, and it was not that expensive. I think it was $900 or something, which, you know, for something like this is quite a bargain.
Yeah,
you know?
It's worth the money.
And I've used it so much. It's just such a beautiful instrument.
Have you ever experimented with harp guitars where you have the resonant strings?
You know, I haven't yet. You know, I picked one up for the first time at the NAMM show last year. Downstairs, there was in Hall E, there was a booth where a gentleman was making harp guitars and selling them, and And I thought, you know, there's a lot of possibilities there. Although the cases are so big, it's like, oh, man, I don't know if I want to travel with one of those. But I do know Muriel Anderson is a friend of mine, and we played together in Memphis a few years ago, and she played her harp guitar, and that was pretty fun playing. You know, I was playing slack key, and she was playing her harp guitar.
So it blended really nice.
Yeah, it is. And having those extra bass notes, you know, are wonderful. Now, another friend of mine, a great guitarist from Canada, Don Alder, he's a fingerstyle guitarist, and he's quite adept at the harp guitar, and he really makes use of those strings. I mean, those, you know, when you have all those extra bass strings, you can create a really fat, you know, it's like a range of a piano, essentially, you know. So, but I would like to try one someday. I don't know. It's like I say, the cases are kind of big.
Yeah. But I have to admit, with this guitar, you got the low end.
Yeah. It is a beautiful sound.
And we were talking a little bit before the show, because you're an engineer and a pretty accomplished one. Can you talk a little bit how you mic your guitars?
Yeah, you know, I've been experimenting a little more lately, but I generally have this one setup that I used for many of my records, starting with, going all the way back to my first record, Coconut Hat. In those days, I didn't have a lot of microphones, but I had one really good tube microphone. It's a Lawson L47. It's essentially a knockoff of a Neumann U47. And I bought that really essentially for vocals and, you know, and I'm recording singers. Mm-hmm. And then I had a few other mics, and I just experimented, and I ended up with a setup where I would use the L47 mic kind of right around the 14th fret of the guitar, out about 10 inches, and then I would use a smaller AKG. I think it was a 480, but it was one of those small AKG condensers, mm-hmm. back sort of angling in towards the bridge of the guitar. Again, about the same distance, because you don't want to. You want the distance to be pretty much the same. Otherwise, you could get phase shift and things like that. You want to keep the distances pretty much the same. So it's two different mics. Now those would go into a stereo or two Neve preamps, just flat, no EQ. Mm-hmm. And then I would go into a stereo tube compressor. I think it was called. It's an ADL, Anthony DeMaria, tube compressor. It's basically the same as an old Urey LA-2, you know, that same kind of sound, very simple to operate, just two knobs. So I would have these settings, you know, marked with tape, you know, okay, these are the settings, and I would, whenever I go to record, it was quite simple. I just set my preamps and the compressors to those settings, you know, with the mics on. And then just for some fine-tuning, and this is something you can do with any guitar recording is I put the headphones on, and I turn one mic on at a time, and I just, you know, just try moving the mic or moving my body position just a tiny bit and just keep, you know, moving it around until you find that really sweet spot. And then you just remember where that is, and then you turn, maybe if you're using two mics, then you shut off that mic and turn the other one on, and then do the same thing. Just slightly move it, and, you know, you generally have the idea where it goes, but you just, even the slightest, you know, half inch or an inch can make a huge difference. You know,
do me a favor, and I'm using Audio Technicas on here, but move around a little bit and just play a little bit, and you can hear how much it changes.
So I'm gonna be up here towards the 12th fret here, and you'll see what this sounds like. And I'll try and keep the distance the same. Now, oftentimes, if you're up here. Of course, this guitar is a little different. It's a Tacoma. It doesn't have the round sound hole in the middle. But generally, when you're up on the neck, you'll get a little less bass, you know. As you move towards the body, I'm going to move it more towards the body. You'll get a big, warm bass. And then as you move towards the bridge, you'll get less bass again, but it'll be a little bit different sound.
Yeah, the top strings come out a little
more. Right. And you might hear a little more of your picking finger, you know. I guess I should talk about this, too, is, you know, of course, there's some people use finger picks, thumb picks. A lot of guitar players, especially if you're doing the Chet Atkins style and Merle Travis style, they'll often use a thumb pick and then just their fingers, like Tommy Emmanuel and people like that. Now, I just, on my first record or a couple of records, I just, you know, I've never really gotten into using finger picks. They just feel a little bit detached for me. I don't feel like I really have the connection to the string. But so in my early records, it was really just essentially mostly the flesh of my finger sound, which is a great fine sound for recording. And then gradually, a number of years ago, somebody turned me on to using acrylic nails, which you have to go, you know, you have to go to the nail salon while there's ladies getting pedicures, and they're all looking at you like, what's this guy doing in here?
And I know, but anyway,
I have found that the acrylic nails, I don't keep them very long. You know, they're pretty short, except my thumbnail I keep long. But there's something about them that I really like the clarity that you get. And also, when you're playing a lot of shows, then you don't have to worry about breaking a nail. I mean, they are pretty darn strong. If you maintain them, they're not going to break. And
do you have to, like, polish them or whatever?
I don't know. You know, what I do is I just keep – I mean, they keep growing out. You can see these – you can see how that needs to be filled in there. But they keep growing out. So to keep them at the optimal length, and you don't want it to change because then, you know, your technique changes and it's going to mess you up. You want to, you know, every day or every other day, you want to take a nail file and keep them, you know, file them down to that length. So I use a rough file, and then I use a fine one to smooth it out. And you also want to file under the nail, too, because that's really where it's touching the string. And you don't want it to be raspy. You want it to be clear, you know, so you get a nice clear sound. But you can, the way I have my thumbnail, it's very long, but I can get two sounds. See, I can get the flesh sound by playing like this.
He's hitting the string to the side of his thumb.
Like that, or I can dig in if I move the position a little bit. I can get that sound, you know. Or
he's positioning his thumb more like at a 45 degree angle, so he's getting the pick.
Here's one riff with just getting more of a flesh sound, and then if I dig in a little bit. Kind of vary a little bit, you know. And I know there's classical players who have a technique where they'll actually file for example, the inside of their fingers, they'll file that a little shorter, so it actually curves a little bit and gets longer as it goes towards the outside. That means a similar thing, that they can, by adjusting their playing position with their right hand, if they position it like so, they'll get a flesh sound, and if they move it, dig it in a little bit, then they'll get more of the nail sound, and they can control the timbre of the attack by doing that. I've never really quite got into that, but I do like these acrylic nails, and you know, you just have to go to the nail salon every few weeks to get them, you know, worked on. But
no, I that was one of the things I was going to ask you, because I know we used to use hard as nails on our, when I was taking classical lessons at school. And if you play steel string, man, it would just chew them up. Like, boom.
Right. That would work on nylon, but not on steel, And the other thing, too, I found, you know, playing with in Hawaiian music, there's what they call a lot of kani kapila, which means jamming, you know, and you're jamming with people. And so you might be jamming with somebody who's using finger picks or a thumb pick, and you know, if you don't have those nails, it's like, man, you can't be heard. You know, those guys are going to be louder than you. So it's like,
or you just break out that baritone.
That's right. Oh, but then you know, once you have these nails, you have a lot more, you know, dynamic range. You can play a lot louder.
I'm going to play a clip that shows you, because I want to show. It's interesting because a lot of what you're doing, I hear it in other music, and I can see. From my own folk list, what I used to listen to folk, it's all connected. That's what I think is kind of interesting. This is an interesting thing because you're doing a slide type of thing. Sounds like a dobro. This is called Hana Highway Slack Key.
Well, there is a dobro in that song. Now,
is a dobro.
Yeah,
okay.
No, there's a slack key, and there's my friend Ken Emerson playing he's playing an old 1940s resophonic, you know.
Okay.
Guitar,
Now, and you're using your Taylor on this?
I'm using a Martin D18 on that, I believe.
Okay, let's take a listen, and you can tell me. If I was in Nashville, except for actually the dobro has kind of a, you know, that kind of single string type of octave thing where he slides up and mm-hmm. stuff that gliss, or portamento, gives it kind of a little bit of the island flavor. But I mean, I could swear that if I could see somebody playing that in Nashville. It's interesting because that type of playing, that kind of, I don't know how to describe that style of finger picking and mm-hmm. and the riffs you're playing. I mean, there's.
Well, you know, when I first started playing guitar, my older brother played guitar, and he was 10 years older than me. He came, you know, he played folk music, mm-hmm. you know, and when I watched him play, he sort of stopped playing and put the guitar in the closet. Eventually, I picked it up, and when I'd see him playing, he was strumming, but he was also finger picking, you know, and he played that old style, kind of, you know, thumb and two finger picking, mm-hmm. and that's probably the first, you know, that's how I learned to finger pick. So of course, I'm probably bringing a little bit of that folk influence into my slack key playing, but it's all finger picking. Slack key is a finger style, you know, as opposed to a strum, you know, it's mm-hmm. a finger style. But getting back to the sound of, you mentioned Nashville, steel guitar was invented in Hawaii. Of course, it's a huge sound in country music. We tend to think of that sound as a country sound. Now, steel guitar around 1900 was invented by a young guy named Joseph Kikuku, and he essentially had a guitar tuned to slack key, and he found out that he, you know, by putting it on his lap and playing it with a piece of steel, whether it was a back of a knife or a little steel bar or something, he got this sound, and it was like, oh, that, you know, and that sound took off in Hawaii and essentially became the signature melodic instrument in Hawaiian music. You know, before that, they were using violins and things like that for the
right.
melodies. Now, steel guitar became a huge thing in Hawaii, and these little groups started touring the mainland around the 1920 or before 1920, these little Hawaiian groups, and they'd always have a steel guitar player and maybe a hula dancer. And they started touring all over the U.S., and all these musicians, and they came down into the Deep South, blues musicians heard them. There's accounts of blues musicians hearing that sound and just saying, oh my, they were just enchanted by that steel guitar. And, you know, and not long after that, people started playing bottleneck guitar,
yeah,
you know, like slide on there with bottlenecks in, you know, in blues. And, of course, steel guitar started getting very popular. You know, there were some music, some stuff, some soundtracks in some of the early movies had steel guitar. It got incorporated into Western swing, Hawaiian guitar. And in those days, it was unamplified. It was just acoustic. And that's why they started inventing these resophonic type guitars with sort of the speakers like dobros, just to kind of compete volume-wise with the rest of the band. Eventually, that instrument was electrified, and the steel guitar was the first electrified guitar.
Yeah.
It was the first commercially released electric instrument with steel guitar. So essentially, you know, when you hear that sound in Nashville, you know, the sound of the steel guitar, its roots are in Hawaii.
I think one of the earliest lap steels, because they used to play it on their lap, was the Rickenbacker one,
mm-hmm.
and it was made for the Hawaiian market.
Sure.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, the lap steel was, you know, that's what they were, that type of style, where it was a single tuning,
mm-hmm.
and they played. In Nashville, wasn't that where it developed later with the pedals?
Right. Well, here, the way that, in fact, I have a couple of those old Rickenbackers. I have one from 1937 and another one from 1945, 46.
The frying pan?
The frying pan.
I don't have the frying pan. I have the one that was just after the frying pan. I want to get a frying pan.
The Bakelite one?
Yeah, I have the Bakelite, and I have the one between the frying pan and the Bakelite. It was sort of a crinkle paint they had. It was metal.
Mm-hmm.
But these are the first pickups. And I tell you what, these things sound so good that, and I know a lot of listeners will think this is funny, but I don't think they have made much progress in pickups, because these are made in the 30s and they sound unbelievable. They're just huge and fat sounding.
Yeah, it was a single coil with the horseshoe.
Yeah, the horseshoe magnet pickup.
That came
My
out.
God, those things are just the fattest sounding things you've ever heard, and they were done built in the 30s, and they were all different because they were all hand wound, so each one's got a slightly different number of windings. And but anyway, yes, steel guitar, the reason they put pedals on them was because one of the techniques in steel guitar, and it's very difficult to get different inversions, you have to slant the bar.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of very complex slants, some of them between two adjacent strings or maybe maybe two strings apart, your first and third. And so these slants are very difficult. And when you do it, it's hard to really get the intonation right, you know. So by building something with pedals, then you never need to slant the bar. You just use the pedal to do all that work, you know. And so that's how pedal steel started. But it's but anyway, steel guitar, like I said, has its roots in slack key.
Well, I'm going to play another thing, another clip that shows another type of a style that if you listen to it, you probably would think, you know, I've heard that before, but I don't associate it necessarily with Hawaiian music. This is called How'd You Do?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Take a listen to this. Totally different feel. Very interesting. And, of course, killer tone. If I was on a quiz show and somebody played that, I would never think that was slack. Except for maybe now, knowing that the tuning, and obviously that's not tuned like a standard guitar.
Yeah, that's an old Andy Iona tune. And this is an interesting thing because that song was really originally a steel guitar song. But it's gone the other direction, arranged for slack key. Now, there was a great musician in the 70s, 60s and 70s, named Otta Isaac, and he was a slack key player who was very adventurous. He had a certain tuning he would use, and he was one of the first guys to play all these different styles on slack key, jazz, lots of different jazz styles. He played with Gabby Pahinui a lot, and they were a great team. And Otta had done a version of this song, How'd You Do, many years ago, which I always loved, and I always had wanted to do an arrangement of it. So it's sort of a tribute to Otta Isaac. But again, like I said, it's an instance where slack key now is imitating steel guitar, you know, which is funny because steel guitar came from slack key. But this is a steel guitar song, you know, slack key played in the style of a steel guitar, sort of.
But I mean, I'm hearing like blues riffs, especially that I had when I was editing these clips. That whole intro before you go and you start swinging, I had to put that in there because that's just like he threw everything in the kitchen sink. It was just like the coolest riffs and the greatest licks in there. Yeah, but it had a lot of blues in it and different influences. That whole, and then you hit all those harmonics,
right?
You know.
Well, one thing about Otta Isaac was, you know, like I said, he was such an innovator, and you know, there's a lot of controversy nowadays with people introducing different styles into slack key and. But I always have to say, wait a minute, you know, this guy back in the 60s was doing stuff that was really out of the box using open tunings, and, you know, it's not a new thing. You know, this guy was doing that many years ago. But,
no,
yeah.
It's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing stuff. But I'm going to play another clip.
Mm-hmm.
This, again, I can hear the influence for me. It sounds a lot of stuff that I learned from. But I presume it came originally. This is called Nahalia Aloha.
Nahalia Aloha. Aloha. Yeah.
Very, very cool sound. And this is the finger picking style. Take a listen.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of my favorites there. Now, is that the Martin?
No, that's actually my Taylor.
That's
actually that one right there that you're holding.
I mean, the tone is just, I mean, the inner voices of the finger picking and stuff. But it sounds like a very, I mean, I could easily hear that on the regular radio.
Yeah. Well, that is example of contemporary slack key. You know, we're using the open tunings. We're using some of the conventions of slack key. There's certain things, and it's like, well, what makes it slack key? And it's, of course, it's a gray area, but I always try on my CDs to have some contemporary and then have some traditional and, have a little bit of a span of styles, mm-hmm. in my, as opposed to just an all traditional or all contemporary.
But on the island, is the tendency to be bringing in new sounds, new blood, new contemporary, or are they like real hardcore traditionalists?
No, they're both. There's a constant embracing of new sounds and styles all the time. I mean, if you listen to the top Hawaiian records, there's stuff that's quite quite modern, but there's also the traditional side too, and there are groups and artists who do nothing but the traditional sound, So I mix it up, and that one is definitely a sort of a modern, contemporary, sort of almost new agey sounding style, and that's nothing new in slack key too, because there's artists like Keola Beamer who's comes from a very long line of musicians and artists. Way down many generations, and he was kind of a pioneer in sort of that modern contemporary style. And I didn't know much about him until I put my first CD out, and one of the other players, a great player named Ozzie Cotani, said, "Oh, some of your stuff reminds me of Keola Beamer." And I thought, "Well, I better go listen to Keola Beamer." And as soon as I did, it was like, "Oh yeah, I love this guy's stuff. He's a wonderful, wonderful player and composer." Mm-hmm. Sort of, I guess you would say that song sort of fits into the Nahalia, and it means Nahalia means memories, so it basically means the precious memories,
This may be a stupid question, but what's like a standard slack key song? Like, what's the one that everybody should know?
That's a good question. Well, there's a classic one called Opii Moi Moi, which was written by Leonard Kwan. And that is a Opii is like a little shellfish, and it sort of clings to the rock right at the waterline, and then they love to eat them, but they stick on the rock real tight. So if you sneak up on them when they're sleeping, when they don't know you're coming, you can pry them off real quick, So I guess that's the concept. But yeah, that's a classic one. Radio Hula is a classic one. That's one that Ledward Ka'apana plays a lot, and he's one of the really top traditional slack key players out there. If you ever get a chance to see Ledward, it's definitely worth mm-hmm. seeing him. He's really, really good and really funny and very entertaining. He's a great, great guy. His pidgin. Pidgin is what they call the Hawaiian Creole. It's sort of a mix of Hawaiian and everything. Mm-hmm. But his pidgin is so thick that when he talks between songs, nobody can understand what he's saying, but everybody laughs because he's having such a good time. It's like, it's funny. I don't know what he said, but it's really funny.
Well, I didn't even get into talking about the development of the expression system. We're out of time. Mm-hmm. But I just want to mention real quick, everybody, go to www.jimkimowest.com and check out what he's doing. And I'm going to mention a couple of dates. December 5th at 7 p.m. he's playing at the Coalesce Bookstore in Morro Bay. December 11th, he's at Harlow's in Sacramento. December 14th, he's at Coffee Gallery backstage at Altadena, which I'm going to try to go to. So if you guys are down there, come and say hi. And then on the 17th, he's playing at Don Quixote's in Felton, California. But check his website because he's constantly touring. And just so you know, the albums that I was playing clips on, there's three of them that I was in. He has more than that. But Maui Skies was one of the more recent ones. And then also, too, Chemo Style and Slack Key West. And you can get those on Amazon, iTunes, pretty much everywhere. So I just want to thank you so much for being on.
Well, thank you,
guys. And we definitely have to have you back on.
Well, it would be my pleasure. Thank you, guys, so much.
Do you have
much.
Another album coming out?
You know, I'm working on two different records right now, so I'm not sure when they'll be out, but I've got two different records, and one of them is a slack key record, and one of them is a guitar record. So it's not necessarily a Hawaiian record at all.
Oh,
you
cool.
know?
Well, then we just definitely
I'll be getting into some, you know, some more different tonalities, like... stuff like that, you know.
Well, we definitely got to have you back for that. We got plenty to talk about. What I want to leave everybody with, and I pulled this song for Scott. It's called the Lullaby for My Tutu.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And he had written a lullaby for his daughter. So I thought I would put this on.
Tutu, really in Hawaiian, tutu means grandparent. You know, it's a grandparent. Yeah. So, yeah.
But I saw lullaby. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I didn't know what tutu was. I was thinking a little dress, and I was having really nightmares of Scott dancing around in a tutu.
Well, only on Wednesdays.
Only on Wednesdays. So anyway, everybody have a great week. Thank you again. Check out www.jimkimowest.com and you're going to love these albums. You just got a little sampling of what. There's a lot of stuff on there, and the tone is just killer.
Well, thank you guys so much, Scott and Jeff. Really appreciate it. Mahalo nui loa, as they say in Hawaii.
All right. Good night, everybody. And this is Lullaby for Tutu.